Sean, there's just a couple of weeks left to go in this season, and it seems like things are only just continuing to pick up steam. It's crazy. President's Trophy races, first place races, playoff races. Where do we go?
Well, I don't know, man. There's so much to talk about. Like you said, it's unbelievable. It's hard to believe, first of all, that the season's going to be over in 10 games for most teams. It makes me a little sad. I love the playoffs, but the regular season, you know, it's such a part of your life for so long, and then it's just over. But let's start, I think, to me, the most interesting thing is kind of the race, the player race at the top, right? Like, you have three players in a dead heat for the Art Ross. And where did Connor McDavid come from? You remember the Connor McDavid in October who couldn't score, couldn't do anything? Actually, he was a point per game and we were throwing him under the bus. He's now 2 points behind Nathan MacKinnon and Nikita Kucherov, both of whom can't stop scoring. And Austin Matthews is going for 70 goals. I don't think he gets there. But he could beat Ovi's 65, which is the active player record.
Listen, I mean, it's a golden age right now for offense, for goal scorers. We're in a new golden age, let's say, for goal scorers. You got five, for offensive players, I should do. You got five 100-point scorers now. Panarin and Pasternak get there Tuesday night. We're recording this Wednesday. Mikko Rantanen, William Nylander, Austin Matthews, Leon Draisaitl, and JT Miller are all in the 90s. We had 11 100-point scorers last season. That, if all those guys in the 90s hit there, that's 10 for this season. Elias Pettersson's 16 points away, so he needs a push. But it's incredible what we're seeing. But I think where I want to go with this, and where did McDavid come from? McDavid's McDavid. I got a question. And I'm going to put this out to you now. I got a question on Toronto radio. I was doing Toronto radio earlier this week, and I love the question. That's why I wanted to bring it to this podcast. What do you think, Sean, is the best accomplishment this season if it happens? Austin Matthews scoring 70 goals, Connor McDavid getting 110 assists, which only Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux have done, or Nathan MacKinnon scoring a point in every single one of the Colorado Avalanche home games? 70 goals for Matthews, 110 assists for McDavid, or MacKinnon a point in every home game?
They're all great. You can't go wrong.
Cop out. Pick an answer. Let's go.
I'm not copping out.
That was the beginning of a cop-out answer.
It is not. They are all great because, again, you just assume that you know things, and when you don't, they're all great, but one stands above the rest. See, there's no cop out there. One stands above the rest. Nathan MacKinnon, scoring in every home game, stands above the rest. Look, 70 goals has happened. You just talked about 110 assists. Mario did it. So did Wayne. The only person that's scored in so many consecutive home games is Gretz. Like, that's the consistency, right? Like, Matthews wasn't good for part of the year. He's gone through some slumps. His team is middling. McDavid wasn't up to McDavid's standards for part of the year. Nathan MacKinnon has brought it every freaking night. Do you know how hard it is to get a point every night?
Well, it's 41 nights. It's not 82. Well, he pretty much does get a point every night. But every home game, it's impressive. It really is. But I'm going to disagree with you, okay? I'm going to disagree with you, and I'm going to say Austin Matthews. Because 70 goals, yes, it's happened. It's happened 14 times in NHL history. I think the last time it happened was 92-93 when Timo Solani and Alexander Mogilny each scored 76. That was a different age of offense at that time. What Austin Matthews is doing right now, and listen, it's a long shot. He's got to get there, all right? So he's got to pick up his pace. I don't think he gets there. But if he were to get to 70 goals this season, it's the hardest thing to do in hockey is to score a goal. The hardest thing to do, right? And he's going to do it almost at a goal-a-game pace. He's impossible to defend, his reach, his size, his speed, his skill. But to do that at almost a goal-a-game pace, like, I don't know the number, and I'm not disparaging McKinnon here, okay, or McDavid. But how many of those assists that they have are secondary assists? They're involved in the play, but they're not the primary play, right? Somebody else had to also make a play to lead to the play that the guy made to score the goal, okay? Matthews, if he was able to do it 70 times to score a goal, to me, that's the best accomplishment of the season. I don't think it happens, but it's the hardest thing to do. And he's been doing it. He's doing it at a rate that we haven't seen in decades.
So we're arguing about something that we both believe is not going to happen.
Pretty much.
I don't even believe that he's going to beat Ovi's record.
I bet you he does. I think he does. I'm going to put it at 67 goals for Austin Matthews this season. He's going to get on a heater. 67.
Let's put a little pork roll, egg and cheese bagel on it.
I won't do that because I only eat Taylor ham. But that's a Jersey thing.
You can have Taylor ham.
All right, it's the same thing.
But he's not. He's not. When this is all over, Obi's still going to hold the record for active players for the most goals.
Okay, let's ask this question then. And by the way, before we ask this question, talk about Alex Ovechkin. He's scoring goals right now. The Capitals are in a playoff spot. They sold at the deadline. They're in a playoff spot. Alan May, who does a lot of broadcast stuff with the Capitals, he's going to be joining us soon. We'll talk all about Washington and how in the world they are where they are right now in a playoff spot as we talk here on Wednesday afternoon. But let's ask a different question before we get to Alan May. If Connor McDavid catches or passes McKinnon and Kucherov, is he the Hart Trophy winner?
No.
Who is in your mind right now?
Nathan McKinnon.
Okay. For a lot of the reasons you've already laid out, I
imagine. He's been the most dominant, most productive player in the league. And you know who's second? Neither one of those guys is even second. You know who's second?
Who's that?
Roman Josi.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. Because we have to talk Nashville. I also, by the way, think McKinnon is the Hart Trophy winner. Kucherov, what he's done is incredible. He's something like 40 more points than anybody else on his team. But to me, the way McKinnon impacts a game and how he impacts the game and how he impacts the Avalanche and the things he does all over the ice, the fear he puts into opponents, to me, that makes him the most valuable player to his team this season. And I think even if McDavid passes them, it's still McKinnon. So we'll agree on that. But I'm glad you brought up Josi, because the other day I was listening to a few things, and I've heard people talking about this in the past, and it was a comment to me. It was a comment that I just hate. Well, Roman Josi's really come on. We should be talking about Roman Josi more. Oh, the Predators. Well, nobody's talking about the Predators. Yes, they are. Roman Josi's been one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League for a while now. He's having another terrific season. He continues to have terrific seasons. And when he plays at the level he plays at, guess what? The Nashville Predators win. He is playing at a level that is befitting Roman Josi and should be in the conversation for the Norris Trophy, if not leading it by this point. But that's not news. That's nothing new. He's a great player and has been for a long time. And the Nashville Predators are people not, they're not listening to this podcast if they're not listening, you know, and they're not listening to you, Sean, for the all season, because they have been your team all year. They're 16-0-2. We've been talking about them now in their last 18. We've been talking about them for several weeks. Big part of it is Roman Josi. A big part of it is UC Saros, Forsberg, O'Reilly, all these guys. But Yossi's one of the best defensemen in the league and has been for a while. The Predators are a good team. They have been a good team for a long time. Are they better now? Sure, they're better now. What they're doing is very impressive. There also may just be a market correction from what they were in their first 50 games of the season. I just don't get why people will say, oh, we're not talking about them enough. Yes, we are.
But they're not, because even us, like, go back and look at our last trophy trackers that we did at the three-quarter mark. Where's Roman Josi?
Well, he wasn't my leader at the time, so I'll give you that.
I don't think he was in your top five.
No, I believe he was, but I have to look.
He wasn't in most people's top five. I don't think he was in my top five.
Now you're going to make me look. I'm not going to go take the time to look, but he was in my top five. I know he was in my top five. He's a great player. He's having a great season. And the Predators, what they've been able to do is remarkable. It is. We have a Super 16 coming out Thursday. I'm going to have the Nashville Predators in my top four because they belong there. They deserve to be there. It's not it's not about what you did in your first 50 or 55 games anymore. It's what you're doing now. Nobody is going to want to play the Nashville Predators in the playoffs. I would favor them in a playoff series against a lot of teams. They can go beat Colorado in a playoff series. They have the defense. They have the goaltending to go do that. They have enough offense. They can go beat Winnipeg in a playoff series. They can beat Vancouver, Edmonton, Dallas. There's no reason the Nashville Predators can't go on a run like they went on in 2017 or like the Florida Panthers went on last year. The difference is the Predators have been playing really good hockey for much longer than the Predators were in 2017 or the Panthers were last season.
They've been better lately, right? And again, like when you talk about Roman Josi, he's been the key to this run. Like that's when he's become really good. In that 18-game stretch, he's 24 points. He's like plus 20. And I know plus minus you're going to – when it's that big a number, it matters.
Yes.
Right? He's eating huge amounts of ice time. Who else is on that blue line?
He has to be the man. We know that. He does. And he is. He's playing like the man. I mean, the fact that you look at this 16-0-2 run they're on also, 74 goals they've scored in the 18 games. 33 they have given up. Their power play, which was dreadful, 24%. Their penalty kill, which wasn't very good, 84%. They're out shooting teams by five shots a game. They're winning 54% of the faceoffs. They're doing all the things you need to do to win hockey games. And it's not just recently, Sean. We're talking about nearly a quarter of the season at this point. This isn't just a small sample size anymore. It's almost 25% of their season. And if it continues on for another however many games that they've got, you're talking about a third of their season, right? More than a third of their season, or roughly about that. That's not a small sample size. That's a team that recognized its deficiencies and got better. And by the way, Andrew Brunette, throw him in the Jack Adams Award conversation without question, right?
Of which he was not a part of at the three-quarter poll either.
Yeah. Well, we should be talking about the Nashville Predators more. they are a team that they are as scary an opponent as any team in the Western Conference. They really are. And it's because of how do you win in the playoffs? You win in the playoffs with excellent goaltending and defense that gets it done and can provide offensive pop when needed. And you have experienced guys. They have excellent goaltending. They have defense that gets it done. A star on the back end. They've got experienced guys. They can win. There's no doubt in my mind that they can go on a long run this season. And it wouldn't shock me at all if they did. It would actually surprise me more if a team like Dallas did or a team like Edmonton did than a team like Nashville right now. Because Dallas is not getting the goaltending throughout the balance of this season that you would expect from Jake Oettinger. Edmonton is a team that, while it has played better defensively and Stuart Skinner has been better, you still have those questions about the Edmonton Oilers. I don't have those questions about the Nashville Predators.
No, I don't have them either. And, you know, if they draw the right opponent in the first round, say somehow they draw Vancouver, which is going to be harder to do now. Vancouver's scoring at a goal less a game per game since the All-Star game. Like, they're not generating the offense they did, and they're struggling because of it, right? I think, you know, you talked about Dallas and their goaltending. Winnipeg has just gone through a horrible stretch, you know, at the worst possible time. I think there are teams regressing while the Predators are moving forward.
Yeah, and it's not just that the Predators are moving forward. They're doing things, too, that show their resiliency. And case in point is their game against Vegas on Tuesday night, right? They're down 3-0 in the first period, and it doesn't faze them, right? They give up three goals. Saros, three goals on 14 shots in the first period. They weren't bad in the period. They just gave three goals. And then they started to come back. And in the third period, well, I mean, they dominated. You know, they scored. Saros was really good. And it wasn't a bad game. Like, it wasn't a bad game for Vegas. It wasn't a bad game for, as Bruce Cassidy pointed out, but it was the Predators just showing what they're capable of doing. It also could be showing a little bit of the warts that the Vegas Golden Knights have right now, which makes it, they're showing to me right now, and they could still be a very dangerous team in the playoffs, but they're showing to me right now yet more reasons why it's so hard to repeat in this league, because to keep up the level of play that they had in the playoffs last year and at the start of the season is really hard to do. And now we're all questioning if they have enough, right? I mean, fully healthy, they have enough, but do they have enough? And health has been a big factor for them too.
Well, their blue line's pretty healthy and they're spitting up third period leads like they're nothing.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the Vegas Golden Knights. That's not their MO. That's not their DNA. That's not any part of who they want to be as an organization. And Bruce Cassidy can say, oh, it wasn't that bad a game. It wasn't. They scored four goals. But they gave up a three-goal lead in the third period. It was 4-1.
Yeah, you got to win that game.
You don't do that in the NHL. Not if you're a good team. Not if you have championship aspirations.
And it's funny, right, the way it works out sometimes. Like, I've been saying it, and it is true, but I've been saying it, like, you know, if you are the team, say, if you're Dallas or Vancouver or Colorado, you know, if you win your division, you finish with the most points, right, in the West, your reward is the Vegas Golden Knights. At the way the Vegas Golden Knights have looked now for a long period of time now, this isn't a short, we talk about Nashville, it's not a small sample size. It's not a small sample size for Vegas either. I mean, it might be an opponent you want to face, right? I mean, it might be the team you want to face at this point, which is, sounds like crazy talk, Sean, but I mean, it's eight teams in the Western Conference that are all very good. And if I had to pick one right now to play, I'd probably pick Vegas.
Where did the Stanley Cup champion go out last year?
First round.
Exactly. Take away Vegas's hot start. Remember, Vegas and Boston, two hottest teams to start the season?
Yes.
Throw that out. Actually, throw it out for both teams.
Well, you do. That's what I'm talking about with Nashville, too. Throw it out.
Right? Throw it out. I don't know if Vegas gets in the playoff without their hot start.
Those games count, which is why they are.
Of course.
But St. Louis would be right there. Minnesota would be right there. And neither one of those teams, I think, we're looking at and saying, well, they're clear-cut playoff teams. But that's the way it is. And it's kind of that way. Listen, I mean, we can pivot. We got Alan May coming up here in a second. Well, not a second. A couple minutes. We could pivot to the East, right? You have the New York Rangers, who are the first team with 100 points, 10 games left to go, first team to clinch a playoff spot. And they're looking at it, trying to win a division, which they want to do. If you finish first in your division, but you don't finish first in the East in points, your reward right now is the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's a little bit different because they're playing well. Vegas is not, right? And if you want to, you know, look at the two. But if you finish the most points in the Eastern Conference, or if you're the Rangers and you drop to second place, you're looking at a much, much better first-round matchup for yourself. Philadelphia or Washington, maybe Detroit, right? You can't pick your opponent, but it is kind of interesting how that works out in the East. The Rangers, first team in, they want to finish with the most points. You want to avoid Tampa. You want to avoid Tampa in the first round, whereas in the West, I don't know that you want to avoid Vegas at this point.
No, I don't think you want to avoid Vegas. And, you know, you look at tonight, right? It's the Bruins and Tampa, and that's the first round matchup right now if the playoffs ended today.
It is. Right? You're right.
And that's going to be a great game. I mean, look, Boston's playing on the second end of a back-to-back, the famed Florida swing. And, you know, they were put through the meat grinder pretty good last night. They won. It was a great game. They won against Florida. You know, decided in the last couple of minutes, physical, you know, there was a price to be paid, and now they have to go and do it against a Tampa team who's playing great. And the other difference is Tampa's goaltending, right? If UC Soros isn't the best big money goalie in the league, well, Vasilevskiy is.
you could flip it around. If Vasilevsky isn't, then maybe Saros is. But Vasilevsky right now would have to be the best big money, be considered the best big money goalie in the league. He has to be. He owns that title until somebody knocks him off. And that's a big thing. You don't want, like, Tampa is that wild card. Tampa could pass Toronto. They're playing well. They could pass Toronto. But it's very interesting in the East. We're going to continue on that conversation. But let's hone in now on the Washington Capitals. We spoke with Alan May, broadcaster for the Capitals, about what they've been able to accomplish, finding themselves Wednesday, March 27th, in a playoff spot, coming off a win against the Detroit Red Wings after trading Mantha, Kuznetsov, and really thinking this wasn't going to be the year. Well, there they are, and here's our conversation with Alan May. Alan, thanks so much for joining us. So here we are today. I just said this. Wednesday, March 27th, we're recording this, and the Washington Capitals find themselves in a playoff spot. Everybody saw this coming, right? Did you?
You know, one of the things I've maintained, and I was hedging my bet from the very first game of the season, as I said, the Capitals would be a playoff team if they won their last games of the season. That was going to go right down to the wire for them to fight a wild card spot. And, you know, it's been a year of ups and downs, and it feels like more downs because when they lose bad, they lose ugly. And, you know, that goal differential thing is really not very indicative of how well this team has played. When they're playing at their best and they're winning games, it's defensive structure. It's somewhat boring, but boring is beautiful in my world right now because I cover this team. The longer they play, the more money I make, the happier I am. But not just that. Caps, you know, I'm an old Caps player. I'm a Cap through and through. And I love what I've seen out of these guys right now. The resiliency of everyone in the lineup, coaching staff, they've kept and maintained an attitude. And once the trade deadline came around, and maybe that all-star break first and then the trade deadline, the teams took it on a completely different tone and tenor, and it's been fun to watch the growth of the young players and the older players really getting into their high gears.
Where do you think that change originated?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is there's been so much turmoil when the noise outside, and we know how much that noise affects every single team. You know, what happens when you're not just focusing on what's going on the ice, when you're talking about different things. You know, we've had arena talks here, but that really doesn't affect the guys because that's years down the road. Does Kuznetsov want to be here? The effort of Kuznetsov. And, you know, he was such a spectacular player here for so long. And then he goes away from the team. And I think when he kind of left the team, the younger guys were able to blossom. You know, Nick Backstrom's departure was way too early. And they were trying to fit pieces, you know, puzzle pieces in there that didn't necessarily always fit. But after the trade deadline, you know, the young players didn't have to worry about, and I know this is a former player, you walk in the room, is your name on the dry erase board to play that night? Is your jersey hanging in your stall to play that night? And now the young players, they get in the lineup, they go in there, and they're thinking about what they're going to do in the game rather than am I going to play? And I think that attitude and the confidence that it breeds with these younger players and the old players by having such a great environment, like TJ Oshie, Ovi, John Carlson are spectacular human beings. They are so good to everyone that's on this team that I really think that the camaraderie that they have within that room, whether it's in the dressing room, on the ice, traveling, you name it, it has been top tier all season long. They haven't beat each other up. They haven't, you know, these guys all want to be on the team. The young guys have earned it. They're not just been gifted spots. They've had to earn it. And I think that the spell last year in Hershey to go all the way to the Calder Cup Finals and win the championship against Coachella Valley, all those young players are completely different now. They're so growing up. They play to win every game. They have a belief. They're not looking for excuses to lose. They just keep finding reasons to win and keep going for it. So I think it's the perfect potion right now. That could change in a week or two. You've got to stay healthy. This is a good group going forward right now. They're all pulling together, and they understand the true value of what the word team means, because they're playing as a team every single game, win or lose, they're sticking together.
How much? Well, maybe not how much. I mean, you're around this team all the time. What impact do you think Spencer Carberry has on everything you just said?
I think Spencer's temperament, his personality, his attitude, his loyalty, his honesty has been spectacular. And, you know, you're not getting a Spencer off camera that's telling you one thing and on camera another. And the players love the communication style. The coaching staff is all in it together. They are a true group. You know, they're not, you know, if they have disagreements, they're keeping it amongst themselves. They're keeping it like grown-ups, and they're making this team better. And they're all going out there gung-ho every day. The attitudes of the coaching staff, and I think that trickles down to the players. The players feel it. And I have not had one single player talk to me, come to me and complain about any of the coaches, any member of the coaching staff. It's been, we're going to find a way. We're going to find a way. And I think, you know, as it trickles down from Spencer, the positive attitude, I mean, all the players, we've already had the guy, Ovi, Oshie, Carlson, as I mentioned, that those leaders, they just keep breeding and it's infectious. So when you think of that, you don't have to worry. You're not, you know, when teams, when there's turmoil, you know, players are always grumbling about the coaching staff and specifically the head coach or the general manager. That hasn't been happening here. So it's just go focus on those games. We've got to find a way to be better. We've got to come together. And I really do believe they've came together since the All-Star break. I think the numbers are 12-5-1. In the five losses, they've only scored 10 goals. They've had 30 goals scored against. So that goal differential doesn't mean a whole lot to me when I look at it. This team is at their best when they're playing really good team defense. And the only way you can play team defense is all five guys got to be on the same page and want to do it. And we're getting that.
In all the years that I've covered hockey, there's nothing that leads to turmoil more than a goalie controversy. And that hasn't happened here. Charlie Lindgren's taken over.
Oh, it's been great to see. And, you know, they're two great humans. Both of these guys are spectacular. And what Charlie Lindgren has come in here, you've got to look at, you know, you got to be right place, right time. Well, he wasn't in the right place in St. Louis or Montreal when you look at the goaltenders that were in front of him. So he was able to develop his craft. There was these really good goaltenders out there. The Caps pro scouting staff did a great job. He came in here only five NHL games under his belt. He was 5-0-0 in those games. He comes in here, no pressure last year, comes out, plays well every night. The team faltered down the stretch. Both goalies were affected. Both goalies played well. They appear to be best of friends. This year he's gone out and he's collecting win after win, and he's doing it in a spectacular style. He may have the best glove hand in the National Hockey League right now. He's a little bit old school and how reactive he is and how when he goes side to side, but he's able to keep his game into control. And I've always maintained this, no matter what level of hockey you're at, whether it's youth hockey, junior, collegiate, the minors, the NHL, men's league, you've got to believe in your goaltender. And right now, when Lindgren goes in there, he's got so much confidence in himself. The coaching staff has it in him. His teammates have it in him. And then he, in turn, is able to play his game right now so well because the team is playing a better brand of defense than they were at the start of the year when he was stealing games. Now it's, you know, the team and the goaltender are uniting and putting a really good effort forward. You know, they've reduced the high danger chances. And when there are high danger chances, you know, the maybe 10 or so a game that are going against them versus the 20, he's stepping up in such a big way and it makes it look easy most of the time.
So we've gone this long. You've mentioned him a few times, but we have to ask you about Alex Ovechkin. Now, it's not a surprise that maybe the best goal scorer in NHL history is scoring goals. He's shooting the lights out right now. I mean, in the last six games, he's got 8 goals on 22 shots. But what is it about the way Alex is scoring goals now that is a difference from maybe earlier in the season? Or is this simply, Alan, just a market correction from the great goal scorer that he is, finally the puck going in?
Well, you have to ask the questions. Last year, you know, he was on a pace. He had 32 goals. He had to leave the team for a couple of weeks. And when he came back, when he left, he was on pace for about 60, 62 goals, something in there, if my memory is serving me correctly. He came back, only had 10 goals the rest of the year, battled some injury problems. And this year, he never got on track at the start of the year. His legs weren't there. He didn't look right. He wasn't handling the puck. I was worried about his hands. Every pass was bobbled. Every shot was off kilter. Things just weren't going his way. He wasn't handling the puck. Well, he went to Dubai on the All-Star break, and we all joke around. It was the camel ride that got him going. And he's been back from there. I think he's at 17 goals and 10 assists, 27 points in 24, 25 games. But he's been moving his legs. He's been handling the puck better. And from the first game back, you could notice there was a difference. I think he needed to exhale. I think he needed to get away from the game. And he's come back with a renewed commitment and love. Well, he's a happy-go-lucky guy. He doesn't take things out on his teammates, but he's going into every game pumped up and ready to play. His skating is better. His passing is better. His puck handling overall is better. And he's got a shot back. But the biggest thing, to answer your question, is on the power play, he's moving around. He'll go to TJ Oshie's spot. He'll go to John Carlson's spot. When that happens, the penalty kill formation of the opposition, they've got to start thinking. And hockey players, really, to me, they're not that great when they're thinking. They've got to be read and react. And all of a sudden, he goes to a different spot on the ice. He's scoring a lot of goals at the paint. He's scoring goals from up top, not necessarily in the office. And then when he goes over to, you know, that spot where we're so used to him, all of a sudden it's on the target, but it's because they're moving the penalty killers around, and that at even strength, he's driving the net. He's getting to that. He's bringing defenders with him. So I don't know where his aha moment was, but it's been great for him. It's been great for the team. And once again, he's the goal scoring leader on this team. Hopefully he gets into the 30s. A lot of people had him counted out. There was a lot of daggers being thrown. I've seen way too many great things out of this guy to think it just fell off last year, you know, halfway through the season, to think that his career is over. He plays the game with a lot of pride. And sometimes you just aren't yourself. You just have to get back to being you. And I think Ovi's back to being himself. And the heart, the love, the passion, it's all there. It's infectious. The guys love him. He's the biggest kid in the dressing room. He's also the oldest kid in the dressing room. But his teammates love him. The coaching staff loves him. And he's rewarding everyone right now by sticking with him.
He got a little bit of time in the spotlight last night. Dylan Strome scores the huge overtime winner, second goal of the game against the Detroit team that you're basically battling for playoff position. Although now the Capitals have kind of moved within striking distance of the Flyers too, so you have to add that into the equation. But how important has Dylan been to this team? And it's been such a long journey for him. I would imagine it has to be very rewarding to be able to watch him step into such a big role.
Well, the biggest thing with him is last year when he was signed by the Capitals, he said it was a team that finally believed in me, and he went out there and he rewarded them with career highs in goals, assists, points. And this year he stepped up his game. At the start of the year, he was in shooter mode, and he was at about 12 goals before he got an assist or so. And now he's got more assists than goals, and he's really got the playmaking part down. But I'll tell you what, talk about a guy that scores a lot of big goals. The Caps put out a highlight package today on their Twitter account, and probably all their other accounts too, but you know, the big goals that he scored, the overtime goals, the third period goals, he might lead the NHL in third period goals. He's been, you know, just a big game hunter. When he has time to take that wrist shot of his, it goes crossbarring in or posting in every single time. And he's playing with confidence. He's a competitive player. I think one of the things that happens when you first start in the NHL and you're such a high draft pick, people are looking for your weaknesses, your flaws. What the Caps have identified in him were his positives. And they've been focusing on his positives, and it's rewarded, you know, him with a renewed sense of confidence in himself. You know, he's never going to get back to those junior day numbers, but what he's doing right now in the NHL is very admirable. He plays the game with confidence. He plays with purpose, and it's been a really great fit. And this team, one of the things about the Washington Capitals, they only go about two or three games with the same lines, and then everything shuffled. So he's had pretty much every winger on the team on both sides of him. He just continues to play his game. And I guess that's a testament to him for, you know, the fortitude that he's showing and the belief. But incredible kid. He's a true hockey nerd and a hockey junkie. You could ask him any stat from 20 years ago, any stat from last week around the NHL, and he knows that he truly loves the game.
Alan, last one for me, and you were touching on it earlier about the way the Capitals play, structure, disciplined, you know, boring is a word we can use, but I don't think it's boring, like you said. I mean, if you're winning hockey games, it's not boring, right? But it's low event at times. Can you keep it low event even against high event teams, or do the Capitals need that high event ability to really get going?
I think the old Washington Capitals were all about the high event, and it ended in disaster in the playoffs way too many years. And the year they decided to go somewhat low event and contain and control the game, they won a Stanley Cup when no one had them penciled in to win the cup. And when you look at this team now, it's taken a while to forge an identity. You take a look at all the new players in the lineup, new coaching staff, pretty much top to bottom. And they didn't really have an identity. And they were up and down at the start of the season. It mostly felt like down, down, down all the time, because when they were losing games, they were losing ugly and it was bad. And something happened. The potion finally was mixed the right way. And they realized their identity is to be a low event team. And the proof is in the pudding. What they've been able to create lately has been low event hockey. And when they stick to it 100%, they don't always just get to dictate that because there's another team on the ice, but they have to realize and understand we've got to be really good on defense. We've got to control the middle of the ice. and that will sustain itself. Right now, it's sustained itself. There's less high danger chances and slot shots than there were in the start of the year. And everything's clicking. The power play is more efficient. The penalty kill is more efficient. The five on five is far more efficient. And it's the identity of the Capitals that they have to be and create a low event game for the opposition. And about a week ago, they were handed a lesson by the Toronto Maple Leafs. They made mistakes early in that game. They started to chase it. They threw the defensive structure out the window. They pulled the game within a goal. And then they started trying to trade chances at the Maple Leafs, which I think is bad news for pretty much any team in the National Hockey League. And they got it handed to them. They came out the next few games, and they go back to low event. I believe that they now realize that they have to stick together on the ice as a five-man unit, take away the middle of the ice. They don't have to hit a lot. They don't, you know, they just have to check the puck. They've got to block shots, keep the puck to the perimeter. And at the end of the game, the most important stat is the game-winning goal and the W. So right now, I honestly do believe they realize that they have to be a low event team and that that will sustain the winning record that they've had since that All-Star break.
Alan, I could literally ask you 100 more questions about what I think is going to be the most interesting team down the final 2 weeks of the season, but we're not going to take up that much of your time. We're going to thank you for the time that you gave us, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the regular season run because it's certainly going to be interesting in DC.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. It's been a lot more fun. I'll tell you what, it's like a playoff race every night. I'm not just a playoff race. I keep saying on my shows, every shift is a playoff shift. Every period is a playoff period, and every game for the Capitals from here to that last game of the season is a playoff game, which hopefully they get in, and then they have a nice setup in the playoffs going in with a lot of momentum.
Sean, that was really good stuff from Alan May. And maybe of all the things he said, my favorite thing was that Alex Ovechkin found his game on a camel ride in Dubai. If Alex Ovechkin will admit to that, that might be the best story of the season.
Well, I'm going to talk to Bill Price, our boss, and see if we can go to Dubai to ride camels.
I like it.
So we can finally have a good podcast.
I like it. I'm all in. That's it. We have to have separate camels, and we're not riding the same camel. Okay?
No. Poor camel. Never.
But, you know, look, it was great stuff from Alan May talking about, you know, the Capitals. And he's right. If they play low event games, they have a chance. If it gets high event, they have no chance. I don't know that I'm ready to say that the Washington Capitals can be an upset special team if they make the playoffs. But I'll tell you this, if they make the playoffs and if their first round opponent is the New York Rangers, a couple of things. One, I'd be very happy to cover that series with Tom Gallitti, our good friend. But two, Peter Laviolette against his former team, or the Capitals against their former coach, and Charlie Lindgren against his brother Ryan Lindgren. It would set up for a lot of good storylines in that series if that were to happen. I just don't know that I would give the Capitals much of a chance of keeping it low event against a team like the Rangers.
And Panarin against Ovechkin.
And Panarin against Ovechkin. That's another good one. Yes, and Panarin, by the way, has been ridiculous this season.
Yeah, no, he's been unbelievable. And I'm sure you'd really complain about the travel.
Yeah, listen, we have no complaints here on the East Coast for travel purposes. It's okay. There's no complaining. But I think it would make for an interesting storyline. I don't know. Do you agree with me? Like, do you give the if they get in, do you give the Capitals much of a chance to pull an upset in the first round? Maybe they could win a game or two, but I just don't see them as a team that would have enough in the tank to be able to really run a team like the Rangers or the Bruins or the Panthers or the Hurricanes to stay with them over the course of a 7-game series.
Well, I give him a puncher's chance, and I give him more than a puncher's chance against the Bruins.
You know, we keep saying that, Sean, and they keep winning, right? I mean, we keep talking about the Boston Bruins and say, I don't know about that, and all they do is keep winning.
They kept winning last year.
Well, that's true. But it's a totally different team, and it's a totally different storyline here.
It's not as good a team.
It's not as good of a team, but they're a 99-point team. But they're a team that we look at and we say, well, I mean, Charlie Coyle, Pavel Zacha, Trent Frederick, this is their center depth. How are they going to match up, right? How are you going to match up in the playoffs with that center depth against, you know, the Panthers or the, you know, the even the Maple Leafs, you know, or teams like that? They don't match up down the middle. But all the Boston Bruins do is keep winning. They have 99 points this season. And frankly, there's a lot of guys we could toss out in this. John Tortorella, who I want to get to in a second, is certainly a name you can toss out into this as well. You'd have to say that Spencer Carberry is another name, you know, you could toss out in this, but Jim Montgomery, put him in the Jack Adams Award conversation as well. We talked about Andrew Burnett before. What they've done and the consistency that they've done it with, it's remarkable.
It is, but I also think it's a house of cards. And we talked a little bit about they have not been nearly as good since the All-Star game.
Right.
Since the turn of the new year. They're a 500 club. They've won a ton of games in overtime.
Well, they've gotten overtime a ton. They've lost a ton in overtime, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have said they've gotten to overtime a lot and stolen a point. And, you know, maybe that's a good omen in the playoffs where they're not playing 3-on-3 and they can play their style of hockey. But they don't strike me as a team that's going to pull away from anybody. So I would give Washington a more than a puncher's chance against them.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. What would you say about the Flyers? Because I just mentioned I wanted to talk about John Tortorella too. And Torts being Torts, he does his things, right? I mean, this is the way he is. And at times you got to deal with it. At times you got to shake your head. But his success is, you know, it's unquestioned. The fact that the Philadelphia Flyers are still in this thing, to me, is absolutely remarkable. I got to tell you, I covered the game Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden, and I didn't recognize. I'm in this league. Like, I cover this league, and there's a lot of names there from the Flyers that until a week or two ago, I'd never heard before. And they're running them out there without Jamie Drysdale, no Ristolainen. No Nick Seeler. They traded Sean Walker. Their number one goalie is not available to them. The guy who started the season as their number one goalie, Carter Hart, not available for obvious reasons. Cam Atkinson, a player they brought in to be a goal scorer, healthy scratch. Sean Couturier, their captain. We know the story there. Now he's on the fourth line. Before that, it was a healthy scratch. And yet the Philadelphia Flyers are still grinding away. They're still finding ways to get points. You could argue that they should have gotten two against the Rangers because they had a 2-0 lead. But they fought back three times in the third period to tie the game before losing it in overtime and got a point that is so valuable to them. It is amazing to me with what they've gone through and the team that they had at the start that the Flyers are still in this thing.
If I'm a Flyers fan, I want the season to end tomorrow.
Yes.
I don't know that they can make it to the finish line. Washington, Detroit, Jersey won't go away. Jersey's in tough, right? They only have 9 games left and they need to make up 5 points. But they're finally getting good goaltending and you see what happens, right? They're playing much better. So there's too much runway left for the Flyers. And they've exceeded expectations. And to get in the playoffs and to get that experience for their young guys would be absolutely unbelievable. But right now, I think they're winning. It's very much the Ken Hitchcock school of coaching. They're winning to spite Tortorella. Right?
You think
Ken
so?
Ken Hitchcock in his Hall of Fame speech, you were there, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
He apologized.
Yeah, he apologized to the player. Well, Tortorella apologized to a player yesterday.
He apologized to the media.
No. See? He didn't. He didn't.
I know
apologize
he didn't. He apologized
to the
goalie. He apologized to the goalie, and the media ate it up because they're so happy that he apologized.
But he apologized to Felix Sandstrom, who he should be apologizing to.
And he still did it.
He still did it.
And I think the players have united against him.
I guess whatever works.
Yeah, and it worked with Hitch. When he was in Philly, they wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
When he was in Dallas, they weren't happy with him. He won a cup, and when it was all over and he had time to reflect, he was sorry. And he said, I wish I had been a little bit better. But the only thing I knew was to throw hand grenades because that's how I got the players to respond. And I think that's what Torts does. He throws hand grenades. And he never answers for him. He still hasn't explained why his captain was benched and scratched.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, like, we don't want to make this the ending of the podcast all about John Tortorella, but I hate that, right? I think there is an explanation owed to the fans of why you're scratching the captain that you just named, the guy who just named captain, who's been a franchise staple. Why are you scratching him? Give an explanation. You want to do it, fine. Okay? That's your prerogative as the coach. You control ice time. That's your carrot. That's what you hold. But to just blow past it, I'm not talking about Sean. I think that's a it's where John Tortorella gets in the way of himself. He doesn't need to do that. He does give an explanation. Do it once. You don't have to do it again.
Yeah. He's not good enough.
That's it.
That's all you have to say.
That's all you have
he's
to
not,
say.
He's Look not at his one numbers. Of my he's not one of my 18 best players right now.
Right. Look at his numbers. He's
Which
not
I don't know if I believe.
Enough. Right. Well, I don't believe that either. But you mentioned you want the season to end if you're the Flyers fans right now. And I totally understand that, right? Can they make it? Can they handle it? And it's been a struggle. But they just went through a stretch, a 10-game stretch, where within that 10 games, they went 4-4-2. But they played Florida and won, Tampa and lost, Toronto lost, Boston lost, Toronto again won, Carolina overtime, Boston won, Florida lost. I mean, listen to the teams they played, Florida, the Rangers, like Toronto twice, Florida twice, the rain. I mean, they just went through a gauntlet of a schedule and got to 4-4-2, got to 500. Now in their last 9 games, Montreal, Chicago, the Islanders, Buffalo, Columbus, Montreal again, then the Rangers, the Devils, the Capitals. It's not easy, and there might be grinded out at this point too, but at least the schedule eases up for them over these last 9 games.
Dude, they look like me trying to finish a 5K.
True. All right. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. And it's not, listen, the way they get in, go 500 the rest of the way, and I hope the Islanders, the Devils, and the Red Wings and these teams don't come up and get more out of them, right? Because it doesn't seem like they want it either. So there is that. The Flyers are just hanging in. It's impressive with what they certainly have been able to do. Before we get out of here, though, and with due respect to the Doan family, it pains me to do this because I am a University of Arizona graduate and Josh Doan went to Arizona State University, which is our rival. But what a debut for Josh Doan at the building where he used to play college hockey in front of his dad, who's the franchise legend for the Arizona Coyotes. What a night for Josh Doan and the Doan family for him to come in and play that way, get a couple of goals for the Coyotes, the team he grew up rooting for and being a part of. That's one of those special stories that unfortunately, Sean, at this time of the year kind of gets not overlooked but moved past because of the playoff races. But it is something that deserves a mention and deserves some focus.
Shane giving his son the game puck after yeah. that game will be one of my favorite memories of this year. Because, A, there's nobody better in the game than Shane. He is one of the best people. He's up there with Ryan Graves and all the other great men that have played this game who are good to everyone they meet. And for that family to be able to have that moment with an organization that means so much to them at a time when there's a little bit of mourning going on, right? They thought they were going to be better than this. They thought they were still going to be involved. It was the night that they got eliminated. So there was some bittersweetness there. But that will be one of my favorite memories of the year, is to see the smile on Shane's face when he was able to do that.
Did you say Ryan Graves? Good guy, but I think you meant Adam Graves.
I meant Adam Graves. Ryan Graves is a great guy.
Great guy.
But he's not an Adam Graves league.
And you know what? And it's also great for the Coyotes to see that they can have a guy like Josh Doan come up and play. This is an important part. Let's not overlook these other teams, right, that are not going to the playoffs and the impact that some young players coming up now can make. And I don't think we want to overdo it or overblow it, what it is. But to get a couple of goals, to get some confidence for a player like Josh Doan, that can be significant for the Arizona Coyotes and him as they go into the offseason, because he's going to be a part of it, right? I mean, he's got to be a part of it for them, and they need to figure out what they have. And I think they were in that part of the race. They were on the periphery, and then they dropped off dramatically. And next year, that can't happen. They got to be a team that's better, and maybe Josh Doan helps them be better next year.
There's a hope that it would, but I got to be honest with you. I'm not going to be paying that much attention.
No.
Right? I hope they play well the rest of the season. I hope Buffalo plays well the rest of the season like we've hoped for years, and Ottawa and all those teams. It's playoff time. There's 10 games left for these teams. There's wild jockeying for position. We don't know who's going to win the president's race. We don't know who's going to win the scoring race. We don't know what any of the pairings are going to be. I thought for a long time Toronto was going to be in that three. They might not. Tampa's coming hard at them. So there's no – and I also thought that in the Central it was set. And here comes Nashville. They can't lose. So the next 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks are going to be epic. And, you know, as Alan May said, every shift's a playoff shift now. It's just the best time of the year.
It's just an appetizer, too, because that's the main course is when the playoffs begin. We're almost there, but there's a lot to do, as Sean just laid out. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the hockey.